All right, welcome, welcome. This is session 154. It is Mormon Leaks, the LDS Church, and Transparency. I am your moderator, Drew Osler. And a couple of quick things before I kick it over to Ryan and Ethan. Please make sure to silence your cell phones and make sure at the end when you do, if you do have a question, to come to the mic. We'll form a line here going back because it is being recorded. As you listen today, we invite you to explore what it means to be Mormon, who gets to carry that label, and what the history says. What does the theology say? At this conference, we encourage you to explore what it means to be Mormon. Please make sure you sign up for the free conference app, WOVA, if you haven't already. It's pretty useful. And for this recorded session, it'll be 90 minutes, so we'll go till 3:30, and we'll end at that time. So about, you know, 2 or 3 minutes before, I'll take one last question, and then we'll finish. Please make sure, if you do have a question, to keep it on topic. Don't get up here and, you know, give a whole spiel. There's a lot of questions going to be for Ethan and Ryan, so make sure you give them time to talk. So, a little bit about them. With Mormon Leaks quickly approaching its 2-year anniversary, Ryan and Ethan invite all to join them as they discuss the journey and share what they have learned through the process at this AMA or Ask Me Anything style presentation. Ryan McKnight is the founder of Mormon Leaks and the executive director of the Truth and Transparency Foundation. He has a master's degree in accounting from UNLV and is a former agent with the Nevada Gaming Control Board. Ethan Dodge, a.k.a. Privacy P. Pratt, this is very Mormon, I love it, identifies as a secular Mormon passionate about truth, a cybersecurity engineer by trade. He oversees all technical operations of Mormon Leaks and has worked with Ryan since nearly the beginning. He believes strongly that greater empathy and understanding can be achieved through listening and shared living experiences. Please give a warm welcome to Ryan and Ethan.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for coming. We weren't sure if we were going to fill the room up, but I think we're close. So before we get started here, as it was said in the announcement there, this is going to be kind of an AMA-style presentation. We're going to talk for maybe 10 minutes, go over a little bit of the history of Mormon Leaks for those that might not know, including some of the things that we've done since last year at Sunstone, and then we're going to kind of just open it up to the floor. So, you know, with that in mind, as we're talking, you know, and you're thinking of the questions to ask, one thing I always like to do is tell people that there's no questions that are off limits. I think sometimes people have a question that they want to ask, but they might be worried that they're going to offend me or Ethan, or they're going to maybe ask an inappropriate question. So I would just hope that you don't worry about that and ask any question that you want. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to answer any question. But you don't know unless you ask. So, you know, we don't mind if there's anybody here that wants to challenge us with a question. You know, don't feel like you're going to put us on the spot. So I just want to make sure that that is cleared, you know, in the air. Were you going to say something on that?
I was just going to say hard questions comes with our territory, so.
Yeah. You know, and, you know, softball questions are good, too, but, you know, that's not all we want, you know. Okay. So, with that, we'll get started. And that's a good picture of me right there. You know, if that was the picture I always put out there, I mean, people might not recognize me when they see me, because that's much better than I actually look in real life. But anyway, I was born and raised in the LDS Church. Other than the fact that I never lived in Utah, I lived a fairly normal Mormon upbringing. Served my mission in Spain, Barcelona mission. Somebody just asked what mission. And actually met my wife there. My wife is from Spain. And she was actually serving in the same mission as me. So she was from a different part of Spain, serving in the Barcelona mission. And I was her district leader. So I actually, well, anyway. Somebody wants to ask me questions about that, they can some other time. But I was a good missionary, and I was honorably discharged. So I live in Las Vegas, like a lot of people know. That's where I was born, even though I moved around a lot as a kid, but that was kind of our home base. And I've been there for almost 16 years straight this time around. And I have four kids. Three of them are here in the front row. My oldest daughters actually work in the registration desk, so they came with me. We gave my wife a vacation this week. She actually had to work and wasn't able to get off work. So, but I left the church in 2013, 5 years ago. Right about, you know, summertime was when I was sort of going through my whole investigation. So, you know, this time 5 years ago, I was, you know, in a whirlwind of mental gymnastics, if you will. So I'm an accountant, but the majority of my career has been spent as a regulatory auditor, you know, which is a field within sort of accounting. You know, my most recent job was as I'm sorry, I forgot his name. Is it Drew? All right. I know his wife's name's Blair. Drew. You know, he said in the little intro there that I used to be an agent with the Nevada Gaming Control Board, and I was one of their financial auditors, and I was with a couple of other government agencies before that. But so that's kind of my professional background, that's kind of it. So, Ethan.
So I'm Ethan Dodge. I was also born and raised LDS in Utah Valley. Well, I guess I was born in Salt Lake, but raised in Utah Valley. Served a mission in Guatemala. And I left the church in 2016. I'm a cybersecurity professional. A lot of you, if you were at Sunstone last year, and you heard my voice, but distorted. I called in remotely because I wasn't actually physically here at Sunstone last year. And I was going under the pseudonym of Privacy P. Pratt at the time. And in September of last year, I revealed my true identity, and the reason why I was staying anonymous is because someone very close to me actually works for the church. So that's obviously a very sensitive topic. and I'm a craft beer enthusiast, and that's just a
translation.
I'm a beer snob. and I apologize in advance. I already feel myself getting a little emotional. I'm an emotional person, and I may start crying. Just fair warning. So I would imagine that a lot of you here in this room are familiar with Mormon Leaks and our mission, but that right there is our mission, vision, statement, whatever you want to call it. We're a nonprofit media organization, and we founded on the belief that increased transparency within the Mormon Church results in fewer untruths, less corruption, and less abuse. That's really the heart of it, right? That's what we believe. We believe the Mormon Church, specifically the LDS Church, however, we would definitely accept information on other sects of Mormonism as well, but everything to date has been related to the LDS Church. But anyway,
we've had a little bleeding over with the stuff rights, right?
We did release a couple documents that had to do with the remnant movement, but it was like the general authority's investigation into the remnant movement, as it was gaining momentum up in Idaho, right? So anyway, we believe that the Mormon Church, the LDS Church, holds a lot of power, and that they should need to be held accountable for the power that they wield.
So just a little quick history. I'm going to try not to get too elaborate, because I know a lot of people who've maybe heard us talk about this before already know a lot of this, but this all kind of started in November of 2015. Does anybody know what happened then? The November policy. What some people may not know is I did play a small role in the leak of that. I was basically the first person to publish that information to a wide audience, but it was kind of on accident. I didn't even really realize that I had stumbled upon this new crazy policy. I had saw it mentioned in a very private, small Facebook group that only had probably 20 or 30 people in it. And I was like, there's no way this is true. You know, and I really didn't think the church would ever do anything like that, right? And so I put it on Reddit and I put it on Mormon Stories, just kind of like, hey, does anybody heard of this? Is this true? And so, you know, not only did it start to kind of go viral, but John DeLynn reached out to me. He's like, where did you hear this from? And I told him who I heard it from. And John DeLynn, through that, was able to track down the memo that KUTV ultimately published. And so John was the one that took it to the media. And the person that I had directed him to at the time was still an active member. And so they didn't want their name really associated with it at the time, but I didn't care. And so John went onto Reddit and said...
He didn't care that his name was...
I didn't care that my name would be associated with it. So, yeah. Not that I... Oh, I'm sorry. Did that come out...
I knew what I was... out wrong.
I knew what I was saying in my head. So John went onto Reddit and said, Ryan McKnight was... which I was just some random Redditor. Ryan McKnight was the source of the leak. And so after that, you know, people would contact me every once in a while, and then that kind of... Nothing really major until in October of 2016, there were these 15 videos that somebody reached out to me through Reddit and gave them to me, and they had been holding them for years, looking for a way to put them out there without their name being attached to them. So I just put them up on YouTube. I just, on the spur of the moment, just created a YouTube channel called Mormon Leaks, because that's just what made sense to me, and put the videos out. I hadn't even watched all of the videos. I'd only watched a couple. And the next day, I had my phone off for several hours because I was doing some things, and I turned my phone on, and I had over 1,000 notifications across all social media platforms. I'm like, what was in those videos? I mean, I knew that like ex-Mormons were going to like them, but I really did not realize like how impactful they were going to be. And they led up to, you know, even the New York Times covered those videos. And so because my name was like in the news that time, unlike with the November policy where my name wasn't really in the public space unless you were really paying attention. Now that my name was there, like I started getting bombarded, you know, with stuff. So I was like, well, I got to build a website, and started putting feelers out. And when I was putting feelers out, he contacted me, and I ended up, of all the people I was looking at, I, you know, ended up kind of hitching my horse to his technical wagon. And, you know, in December of 16, we launched a website that was dedicated to leaks, and that includes, you know, protections in place to protect the privacy of the sources.
Yeah. I guess I must have been paying attention because I did know about your involvement in the November leak.
You did or you didn't?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
that. Yeah, if you were on Reddit, like, that's kind of where most people knew my connection, if you were paying attention to Reddit.
Yeah. Yeah, so December 19th, 2016, specifically, we launched the website. We got way more media coverage the day that we launched than we expected, and we hadn't even leaked anything. We were on the CNN ticker at the bottom.
I was interviewed on live on Al Jazeera English, which is a European channel.
Yeah, we were shocked at how much
we hadn't even released anything yet.
Yeah. And so, yeah, that was, like, the craziest day. That was, like, we launched a couple hours late than we were expecting to, and it was due to some technical difficulties, and that was, like, one of the most stressful mornings of my life. But we pulled through, we got it, and we've ironed out a lot of kinks now. So January 2017, we released our first real leak under the name Mormon Leaks, and that was the General Authority Pay Information. That was Henry B. Eyring's pay stubs from the early 90s or maybe late 90s, sometime in the 90s, and then a 2014 memo showing a general authority being his living allowance or stipend or whatever they called it in the memo being raised from $114,000 to $120,000. And that day, Eric Hawkins from the church PR department gave a statement to the media saying that all general authorities are paid the same amount of money. And that
the
was
same base pay.
The same base pay, yeah. Thank you. And that was the first time that we're aware of that the church publicly recognized that general authorities are paid in some amount. And so that was, for our first leak, that was a huge achievement for us, and we were really happy. And then the leaks kind of started pouring in, right? And February, March 2017, we released the bubble chart, or the enemies list is what the Washington Post called it. For those that aren't familiar with it, it was a PowerPoint presentation. It was one slide from a PowerPoint presentation. Well, we released the whole presentation, but this one slide had it had like 13, 14 bubbles on it, and they all varied in size, and it was like a political spectrum, and the title said things leading people away from the gospel or something like that. I'm paraphrasing
something
here.
Like that.
And then, it was a political spectrum. And on the left, you had things like John DeLynn and ordained women. In the middle, they had a big old bubble for pornography. And on the right, they had like Denver Snuffer and
some guy that nobody had ever heard of.
He was a BYU professor.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Apparently, he was like worked in the CES world, and he had some very radical right wing views of the gospel.
Yeah, to this day, I still don't really know. I've met somebody that served in his mission.
Receive an email at some point from a family member of his, and they told me that he was really upset about the fact that his name was on there.
Yeah.
So he didn't know the church viewed him in that way.
Yeah, he wasn't upset with us for not
yeah,
redacting
he,
his name.
He didn't know the church saw him that way. But that was what was told to me by a family member. I don't know if it's true.
And that was significant because we got that in March 2017, and it named John DeLynn and Denver Snuffer and then Ordained Women. And Kate Kelly from Ordained Women, John DeLynn, and Denver Snuffer had all been excommunicated in a year or two previous to that, which was significant. The next day, we released that on February 28th, 2017, and the next day on March 1st, we got a DMCA takedown request from the church claiming copyright infringement. How many of you here are familiar with the Streisand effect? So I'll explain it really quickly. Barbra Streisand had a home in the Bahamas or some island, and a picture of the home leaked to the media, or the media found out where she lived, and then she tried to sue the news organization that published that photo, and it got taken down, but then it disseminated all through the internet because she tried to censor it. And so because she tried to censor it, she actually ended up making it even more bigger news than it was supposed to be, right? And so the Streisand effect took effect for this bubble chart. What's funny is that anything we had leaked up to that point, that was probably the document that you could argue was the most forgeable, that we fabricated it, because it was a generic blue PowerPoint. Slide on PowerPoint in Times New Roman font with a bunch of circles on it, right?
Well, and there had been really no media requests, and I had sent it to my media contacts, and none of them really bit on it. And the only, and I don't even really, I wouldn't even really call this media, but the only attention that it got was a John DeLynn podcast about it. That was it. And until the DMCA, and then all of a sudden the Washington Post wrote a story about it because of the DMCA.
Yeah. So. And we responded, we were able to get a hold of Mark Rondassa, who I don't know if anyone who follows these types of issues, he's one of the most prominent First Amendment lawyers in the country. And he wrote us a response letter to the church pro bono, in which he basically gave him the middle finger and said, no, it's staying up.
It's worth a read if you haven't read his letter. It's not the traditional legal letter.
If you ever get a chance to personally meet Mark Rondassa,
he's a
highly
character.
Recommend it. He's a
yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
July 2017, we released the first batch of the McConkie papers. We actually did that on Pioneer Day 2017.
And we did it the Tuesday before Sunstone started last year.
Yeah. And then 2 days later, we got a DMCA takedown request from the McConkie family.
I was in an Uber on my way to University of Utah for the dinner that they do on the Wednesday night for Sunstone, and I received the email when I was on my way to the dinner.
Yeah, for those that aren't familiar, let me clarify what the McConkie papers were. We got a database of the complete works. Well, so it wasn't quite complete, but a lot of works from Bruce R. McConkie, including a bunch of ones that were labeled unpublished. And the first batch that we released everything that was under that label of unpublished. And one of the most fascinating documents in there was actually his firsthand account of being in the Salt Lake Temple when the priesthood ban was lifted in 1978. In no way incriminating for the church or Bruce R. McConkie at all. It was just fascinating.
If you haven't read it, you need to read it. It's probably one of the must reads on our website.
As a non-believer, I'd love it. It's just absolutely fascinating. It's a very important piece of history, in my opinion.
I actually had a historian, like a legit PhD college professor, say to me that he had heard of that document's existence but had never been allowed to view it by the family. So...
Yeah,
it was. I thought it was pretty significant. But.
Yeah, so we got a DMCA takedown request from the McConkie family, and then keep going.
We did the same, and we responded basically in the same way we responded to the church. So
in a little bit of a nicer fashion, but
in and so now in August of 2017, we released probably one of our most controversial leaks. Definitely up to that point, maybe even arguably still to this day, some people would probably say. And that was a video that was secretly filmed of at the time he was a BYU football player. He's since left the school, and I don't know, did he join the University of Utah or no?
Still up in there. It's Francis Bernard.
Francis Bernard. He was did he join University of Utah? I don't know if he joined the team or not, but he was a prominent running back for the
running back and linebacker.
And linebacker for BYU. And anyway, and he's LDS and return missionary and all that kind of stuff. The video was this altercation with was it Provo police or BYU police?
Provo
Provo, because he lived off campus and he was breaking curfew. He had alcohol. He had girls in the room after curfew, all this kind of stuff. And people were calling because of the nuisance.
It was a noise complaint.
And so you hear the police saying to him, trying to get him to calm down because he's been drinking. And they wanted him to just calm down so they can go away and he can go about his business. But he doesn't want to let this go. And they just wanted to, like, give him a citation and be done with it. But he kept, like, escalating it to the point that they were going to have to arrest him. And they are talking in a way of, like, don't you realize what this is going to do to your football career? And they were kind of treating him with some kid gloves in a way that maybe a regular person wouldn't. Of course, I guess a regular person might not even get in trouble for what he was doing. But because he was a BYU student, it was a problem, right? Well, I mean, he wasn't underage. He wasn't underage drinking or anything like that, but...
Well, the important thing here is that, in my mind, this was shortly after the Salt Lake Tribune had done their reporting on when the Provo police and BYU Honor Code Department were in cahoots during the whole Maddie Barney investigation when she was raped, right? And that they were sharing information with each other, and this took place after, and the BYU police in this very instance were citing the Honor Code, that he was breaking the Honor Code. The BYU police department shouldn't give a shit about the Honor Code, right? They have no jurisdiction there, right?
Situation. And just to piggyback on what he said, basically, you know, many of us know people personally, or we've heard stories of people who were not afforded the same long leash that Francis Bernard was. And this was not about Francis Bernard. We didn't really, you know, we wished him well, and it really wasn't about him. And really, I don't even think he did anything that bad himself. I mean, other than maybe some of the racial epithets he was throwing out, but he was drunk and, you know, probably would regret using some of that language. But, I mean, we weren't upset that he was drinking alcohol or had girls in his room at 11 o'clock at night. It doesn't matter to us. We were wanting to highlight just sort of how the inequitable situation that BYU students have. So I won't elaborate more on that. Maybe some people will have questions about it or something, but
We intentionally included our most controversial things in here so that if you guys want to ask questions.
And the main controversy, just the underlying controversy, was whether or not we should have released this, you know, about this private citizen and he's not a general authority. And there's some legitimate questions about that. So in September, we released our second batch of McConkie papers, just some more sort of unpublished things. Some of them were talks that he gave at like funerals or firesides that you know the people that were there heard them, but they were just never published. Some of the stuff that's in the McConkie papers are things that are like manuscripts to books and manuals that were never published. Okay, so there's just a mixture. And if you were to Google Mormon Leaks McConkie papers, you'll find it. And there's a landing page that has all of the McConkie papers listed there, with a brief description of what each one is.
I think it's a total of 90 documents.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there was just a little, you know, maybe some inside baseball interesting thing. One of the documents that was in this database, because there were things in the database that were published, and one of them was the Mormon Doctrine. And we were, before we opened it, we were actually hoping that it was a first edition, because that one's hard to come by. In fact, I'm not even sure if there is a digital copy of the first edition of Mormon Doctrine. But it turned out, I think, was it second edition?
It was a second edition,
which is very easily accessible. So we didn't release it. November in 2017, we kind of did a little bit of a reconstitution of our organization. And Ethan and I co-founded the Truth and Transparency Foundation, which is a 501c3, and we put Mormon Leaks under that umbrella, and we also added faithleaks.org. And this is essentially Mormon Leaks, but for every other religion. Now, we have released some things through Faith Leaks. Admittedly, it hasn't taken off as much as Mormon Leaks has, but, you know, still early. But we have had some good leaks and some actual national media coverage from at least one of the leaks that we did through there.
And one thing to keep in mind, too, is that both of us have day jobs and young kids, and it's hard to...
This is not our full-time job.
Yeah.
If it was, there's so much more that we could do, but... okay, February, we had another significant release, Tiercy Hadlock. I don't know if you guys know who she is. Now, this was a unique leak in the sense that our source and who was also the subject of the recording was okay with her name being attached to it. So it was not an anonymous leak. But she basically, the short version of what this tape was is that she got divorced. It was somewhat of a contentious divorce. Her husband, her ex-husband, had an emotional affair with someone in their ward, and that's what was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back in their marriage. And as they're going through the divorce and shortly after, she was sort of expressing her feelings and sort of needing a shoulder to cry on, was talking to her friends in the ward about what happened. And the stake president came in and was like, you have to stop talking about your divorce to people. And yeah, it's a crazy there's two recordings, right?
Threatened to take her temple.
Tape her temple recommend away if she didn't stop telling people about her divorce. Not that she was, he didn't accuse her of lying about the divorce or spreading lies. Just simply saying, yeah, my husband did this and this is why we got divorced. So I would encourage everybody to read it. It's a pretty powerful recordings. It's two recordings. It was two different meetings, and I don't know. I found them to be pretty powerful.
Yeah, and one of the reasons why I wanted to list it here and why it's slightly more controversial than other things we release is because we kind of have a rule. If somebody's mentioned by name and they're a general authority or above, we it's just blanket. We typically do not redact their names unless under very certain circumstances. In this particular situation, we did not redact the stake president's name,
we normally would redact a stake president.
We usually would, but in this particular situation, we did not, and we took a lot of heat for that. I stand by that decision. Yeah. I don't regret it at all. But that's why it was fairly controversial.
And for us, if the actions of a lower level leader who we would normally redact, if we determine, you know, in our editorial process that their actions, you know, constitute, you know, a high crime and misdemeanor within Mormonism, then that's going to kind of be what's going to call for us to do that. And in this particular case, if you haven't listened to it, you listen to it, and you're going to see this stake president was so out of line. We just felt we had to say who this guy was. He was so over the top in his request. So March of 2018, we released what is now referred to as the McKenna Denson tape, or maybe Joseph Bishop tape, you may somehow, and I'm sure a lot of you have heard of this. It did get a lot of media attention, and McKenna Denson is actually joining us here today. So those that didn't know, this is her right here. I know that you're giving a presentation on Saturday. What time? So the 2:00. Do you know what room it's in right now? Or I mean, you guys, everybody can look on the schedule, but I would encourage you guys. So it's on the broader topic of the Mormon Me Too movement. And so she's going to be on there with a panel with some other people. So I would encourage you all to go there. And then, you know, you're going to be here tomorrow and whatnot. So if you guys see her around, I'm sure she would be happy for you guys to come up and say hello to her. So we released this tape. Go ahead.
I was just going to give an overview of exactly what it is. Yeah, so basically what this tape is McKenna Denson, for those of you who haven't listened to it, McKenna Denson goes to talk to her former MTC president. She does not reveal who she is at the time, at the beginning of the interview. But she later on in the interview, she confronts him because he raped her in the MTC.
And then
sorry. And In the tape, he doesn't admit to the rape, but he does admit to molesting other women who were under his jurisdiction as a leader in the church.
Yep.
And one other quick thing. I guess this may be a little bit of a political correctness statement here, but I would say that when referring to this tape, if you're debating between the Joseph Bishop tape or the McKenna Denson tape, please refer to it as the McKenna Denson tape. The survivor deserves to be remembered much more than the perpetrator.
All right, so. So that's kind of an overview of what we've been up to, you know, since we started and since last year. Obviously, there's some other things we left out, so maybe there's something that you know that we've done that we didn't talk about. But right now, we want to go ahead and open it up to the floor and, you know, try not, you know, because I know there's probably going to be a lot of questions, so try to get right to your question, and, you know, we'll do our best to give you a good answer.
Talk about blowback, both institutional and familial. I know Ethan mentioned that somebody close to him worked for the church.
Mm-hmm.
If you can give us some personal insight.
Okay.
Can you expand on what you mean by, like, institutional blowback?
Ryan left the church in 2014, so prior
2013.
To 2013, so prior to doing the Mormon leaks, this really didn't impact you that much.
Sure.
But it would have impacted you, but there's still got to be some sort of institutional blowback.
You mean like from the LDS Church?
The church, you know.
The only time the church has ever contacted us is with that one DMCA takedown request.
We had both resigned from the church before we started Mormon Leaks.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Maybe that was
family troubles.
Okay.
Yeah. So as I said, the first year of my involvement, I was anonymous under the name of Privacy P. Pratt, and I. The only people that knew my involvement were Ryan and my wife. And everyone else knew me as Privacy P. Pratt. And in September of last year, I revealed my identity, and I was totally expecting all my believing friends and family knew that I had left the church because I decided to leave the church March of 2016. Obviously none of them knew about my involvement in Mormon Leaks, and I was totally expecting all my believing friends and family to come to me and say, hey, what's up with this? Why are you attacking the church? Why are you trying to destroy it? Which is not what we're trying to do, by the way. We can get into that in another time. But I have not been approached by any of my believing friends and family about Mormon Leaks. It's honestly shocks me. So.
Yeah, and I really haven't either. I mean, I have a lot of siblings that have left the church as well, but as far as like believing family and friends, it never really comes up. When I left the church before Mormon Leaks, you know, I suppose there were sometimes some contentious conversations, but I'd say the biggest blowback that my family felt was the loss of all of our friends. And especially for my wife, it was especially difficult because she basically, everybody that she knew just stopped calling her. And that was had nothing to do with Mormon Leaks. It was before Mormon Leaks was even a thought. Just us stopping going to church, even her closest, the people that she thought were her closest friends just stopped returning her phone calls. So we kind of had to like start our life over in that sense. And so it's been kind of difficult.
I almost know the answer to this is just time, but have you considered putting historical leaks, being somewhat of a historian, having a page for that, like Wife Number 19 or Confessions of John D. Lee, some of the famous historical ones and as they come out and are interesting.
So we actually, one of the reasons we created our wiki page was to do that. And I mean, I have done, I don't know, 5 or 6 leaks that came before Mormon Leaks that are out there, and I have put them on there. And we always put like as much as we know, like, you know, where it was first published and all this kind of stuff, and then put it on our wiki so it's sort of preserved for, you know, time and all eternity.
Yeah.
but, yes, we do want to do that. I have a list of things that I want to put on, but time. Like Ethan said, we both have jobs. We do not make money from Mormon Leaks. That we literally do what we can in our free time. So it's difficult, and if anybody's going to come up and say, well, why don't you just get volunteers, it's not as easy as that because with what we do, there are trust issues. So giving somebody access to the back end of our wiki would be, it's difficult. So
Yes. Is there any potential leak that you could be given that, I mean, it could be big news, but then for whatever reason you morally feel like it shouldn't be released? And, mm-hmm. and if so, what kind of standards would you use to choose whether you or not you release something?
So I think that generally speaking, if it's something that came from the church, it's almost always, I mean, there probably is a circumstance where it wouldn't, but it would almost always get released. Now, if it's an outside thing, but it's about the church, for example, the McKenna Denson tape was not from the church, but it was about the church. That was where we're probably going to have a little wider, you know, line in the sand. And I've mentioned this before that, like, an example of what you're talking about is, like, I have bank statements from a couple of the 12 apostles, and there's nothing in these statements that, like, you don't see, like, deposits from the corporation or the president of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. You know, there's no, like, obvious connection of where the money came, at least in the documents that I have. So, you know, this money could easily be money that they saved up through their professional careers and, you know. And so because it really has nothing to do with the church itself, or at least we can't connect it, as much as ex-Mormons would probably love to see these bank statements, they're never going to. So that would be an example. There isn't a really, though, a defined line. So it's just kind of like we would know it when we see it. I mean, because I don't want to say, well, we would never release X because
we might.
We might. You know, there could. We don't know all the variables of an individual item. So, but the line exists, and, you know, it's similar to the Supreme Court definition of pornography. You know it when you see it. So.
Yeah, we definitely operate in a gray area of ethics. There's no question about that. And so, yeah, it's, like he said, it's hard for us to draw a line right here with you publicly. But obviously I'm biased, but I feel like we've done a pretty good job.
What do you think about the value of providing context or editorial information with leaks? It seems like in the beginning you kind of released stuff even though, you know, we hadn't even watched all of these or we didn't know that this was legit, whereas later on you're saying we thought it was important to release the stake president's name because there's, you know, so much information that's egregious about it. That so has that changed over time, and what do you think about that?
Sure. Well, I think from the time we started, as far as like us analyzing the individual leak, I think that has remained at the same level since we started the website, but definitely in the videos, because I wasn't really doing Mormon leaks yet. Like, this guy sent me some videos, he wanted me to put them up. I didn't have time to watch all of them, so boom, I put them up. I would never do that today. I would watch all of the videos, of course. As far as us editorializing in our press release or on the wiki page, we try to keep our editorializing to a minimum. We just want to give just the straight basic facts because we're trying to avoid the accusation of influencing the reader's conclusion of what they read. Because with the exception of maybe one or two leaks, almost all of our leaks could be viewed from a faithful perspective without much mental gymnastics, to be honest with you. And so we don't want to like taint that process and just make it sound like this is something that is reflects negatively on the church. Okay, so now on the flip side, though, we've been accused of not providing enough context, and that might be true in some cases, but I think in most cases, when I talk to people about that, what they're actually saying is that we didn't provide enough explanation about what these documents mean. But we're trying not to. We're trying to just give this is the date, this is who was involved, you know, and you know now. In some cases, you will see more explanation. In some cases, you won't. It just depends. But generally speaking, we go out of our way to keep the editorializing to a bare minimum.
And yeah. Echo everything you said. As soon as we start doing any more editorializing than that, like a lot, the biggest complaint that we get is usually when we release like a long piece of audio or a large document, and they want like an outline or like a synopsis. As soon as we start hitting the points that we think are big deals, our biases are everywhere, right? So that, and if we have a volunteer that wants to go through and like make a transcript, like with some audio recordings, we have made transcripts, but that is time consuming and costly. So
now I will say everything in this world has an exception, right? And so, like, what he said is true about, you know, we get this recording, we just kind of put it out there, we say when it was given, whatever, and we don't really point things out. Now, if something really, really egregious was said in the audio, then we would probably pull that out. But we're not going to do it with just mildly
shocking things. You know, it's got to be something really, really egregious for us to pull that out. Okay.
I really like the phrase high crimes and misdemeanors within Mormon context. What's your criteria for determining what is high crimes and misdemeanors within our Mormon context?
Well, I'll let Ethan answer first. I have an answer, but I don't know what his answer would be. So,
I was going to pass it to you.
I'll take it. I'll take it because that's my phrase. I never, you know, approved that through him. Listen, for me, you know, obviously Mormon League's transparency is a huge deal, and most people think that like my passion for transparency and appropriate disclosure started with Mormon Leaks, but that's because they don't know my background. So this is what I've lived and breathed for my entire professional career. And to me, the ethical violation that is the lack of transparency is, in the Mormon context, a high crime and misdemeanor. So I don't know if that answers the question or if there was... Good? Okay.
I'm a... Excuse me. I'm a CPA. I've had a long career and care a great deal about financial transparency, particularly for churches and nonprofits.
Sure.
You know, I think from a professional point of view, it should be a requirement. Are we getting closer to getting any kind of financial information of financial statements or of any type?
Like...
from the church?
From the church, yes. Like yeah. On their own.
From John Hamer says no. Infants on Thrones fans will know that joke, but I don't see it. I'm not an optimist in that regard. I don't know what Ethan would say to that.
I'm definitely not an optimist there either. I could see it happening decades down the road, right? After much, much external pressure, as we've seen historically, has worked with the church, but anytime soon, no.
I think the problem with it is that, you know, let's say that the church decided to disclose their financials in the same way maybe a publicly traded company would, you know, and issue a, you know, set of financials like that. And let's say that we all got into a room and you took the fiercest critic of Mormonism and the most loyal Orthodox member, and they both agreed that, wow, this is a beautiful set of books. You know, there's really nothing we could complain about. Let's say that happened. Mm-hmm. All the people that left Mormonism are not coming back to church because of that. Because a lack of financial transparency is one bullet point in the long list of reasons why somebody left the church. So they don't really have anything to gain. Now, let's just say that in those financials, there are things that would leave a bad taste in the mouth of maybe an active member. That's within the realm of possibilities, and that could be the straw that sort of sways them into leaving the church. So they have potentially something to lose from being financially transparent. So why would they do it? Mm-hmm. That's the way I look at it. That's unfortunate. Maybe I'm a cynic, but that is...
I would argue... I agree with what you just said. I wouldn't full out say that they don't have anything to gain. Obviously, like, their reputation and public image would go up if they started being more financially transparent, because very, very few religions are, and I think that would be an upstanding thing. But other than that, no.
Sure. It would give critics one less thing to complain about.
Couple things. One, just so you know, in our case against the church, one of the things we're asking for is their financial records, that we will demand those. And part of the reason is we want to know how many other victims and survivors have been paid off and been given a non-disclosure agreement. So we'll get as much information as we possibly can. But the question that I have for you two is, you got a lot of blowback when you released my tape.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain to us how you came to release that tape? And is that funny?
No, go ahead.
We were expecting this question.
But not from you.
My question was going to be, would you do something like that again? Because uh-huh. I remember there was a lot of controversy that it was released, and I thought, this is great, but mm-hmm. at what cost?
Yeah.
So,
well,
there are others out there, I'm sure.
We're not expecting this question from McKenna. Well, that's for sure.
Before you finish, or before you even answer, I am incredibly grateful to Mormon Leaks for leaking my audio tape, even without it. And I have to say this. No, it's not that it was without my consent. It was prior to my consent. Because what MormonLeaks wasn't aware of at the time was that we were trying to get the non-disclosure agreement from the church that they wanted me to sign. We wanted to get the amount of money they were offering in a document so that we could leak it to MormonLeaks. So I had already prepared for MormonLeaks to leak my audio. They just did it a little bit ahead of time, but they did the world a favor, wouldn't you say? Wouldn't you say?
Like he said, we were expecting this question, but not necessarily from McKenna, which we were actually planning on not answering this question. but it sounds like maybe we have permission to. I don't know.
Yeah. It's
so we took a lot of heat.
Sorry, this is the first time we've publicly told this. Yeah. So this is.
I'll reveal a few things here that we've never said before. But we took a lot of heat, and I think I don't know if we could have backed that heat down or not, but we probably could have said some things in our defense at the time that we chose not to. Just out of respect for McKenna and the process, because, well, first of all, I didn't even know McKenna at the time. And so, you know, we were just like, you know, if the price of getting this out there is us being criticized, then so be it. So, but all right. I hadn't even thought about what I'm going to say here, but okay, so our source of that tape, a lot of people think that McKenna Denson sent us that tape, and she didn't. Okay. Although we were told by our source that it was given to us with her permission to release it. And we began to listen, and we were told at the time, this is what we were told, again, not by McKenna, but we were told that the reason why it was being given to us and with permission to release it was because that the legal options appeared to have been at the time exhausted. And so we listened to the tape, and obviously, you know, we were like, okay. We didn't know anything about McKenna Denson, okay, other than what was on the tape. And we're listening to this, and, you know, it sounds very compelling. And, you know, at first, you know, we debated. We listened to this tape. I don't know how many times Ethan listened to it, but I listened to it probably 5 or 6 times before we released it in its entirety. And, you know, we went back and forth, and we're like, okay, is she baiting him? You know, did she force him to say some of these things? We're, like, going through all these scenarios. We sent it to a therapist who, you know, deals with some of these kinds of things, and had no connection to McKenna or anything like that. And she felt, her assessment was that while she couldn't say whether or not, you know, McKenna was telling the truth, she said, McKenna is speaking in the way I would expect a victim to speak, and Joseph Bishop is speaking in the way I would expect a predator to speak. So that was somewhat comforting to us. And just
to clarify, it's not that we didn't believe McKenna's story, that why we went through this. It's because we are a media organization with a certain reputation that we can't just throw something like this out there without going down all avenues to make sure it stands on its own.
And while all of this is going on, because I had already talked to a couple of media outlets, and I knew this was going to be a big story if we released it. And, you know, unbeknownst to McKenna and our source, you know, we were talking to some other people with some knowledge of the situation. And it came to our attention that maybe there was reason to not believe McKenna. But we didn't know what that reason was. We literally didn't know what it was. We just were told that it was something about her that maybe she's not a credible person. And so we were really worried about that. We were like, what could this be? So I remember I sat there and I said, and I told Ethan this, I said, okay, what's the worst case scenario here? The worst case scenario is that somehow this woman heard that this guy did something to some other girls, somehow adopted their story and weaved this narrative and was able to get him on tape saying these things, right? And that, you know, she was completely making it up. Like, that was in my mind the worst case scenario. And we said, even if that is true, even if that turns out to be true, he still said what he said about other people. So this was one of the reasons why we wanted to, and I don't even really know what McKenna's desire was at the time as far as redacting her name, but we wanted to redact her name at the time
just in case it turned out that she wasn't telling the truth, we were not releasing it at the time necessarily because of her specifically, but more about because here is a former mission president admitting in his own words that he had been inappropriate with a number of women over the years.
Which is exactly what our headline was.
Which is, yes, if you go back and look at it, it wasn't about this man who raped McKenna Denson. That's not what our headline was. Now, we're preparing this. This is kind of the... I've said parts of that story before, but this is kind of the part that I've really never gotten into. But, you know, there's this whole idea out there, and I think the origin of it was because in the Salt Lake Tribune article, I think McKenna was quoted in saying that we had released the tape without her permission or something along those lines.
She said prior to her consent.
Or prior to her consent or something like that. And we had released it. We had received it, you know, with her permission. Now, I don't know if our source, you know, misunderstood or not. But as we're preparing this leak and we're redacting things and we're coordinating with the media and we're, okay, you know, we're all set for Monday or Tuesday or whatever it was that we released it. I think it was like, I want to say it was like Saturday, the Saturday before. Our source reached out to us and said, McKenna would like you to wait to release the tape. And we were like, why? And we couldn't really get a straight answer, but it was something about how and again, you know, and I don't even know if I think I've told McKenna this, but so I just... This is like, you know, open and honest moment here. Remember, I don't know her at all. But it was something along the lines of the way it was told to us was that she wanted to do one last ditch effort to see if she could use this tape to garner a settlement from the church. Now, if that was misconstrued to us, I don't know. And we just didn't sit well with us that this woman was going to try to use this tape. And again, maybe she wasn't, and this was misconstrued to us. I don't know. But this idea that she was going to use this tape to get a settlement, and then all of a sudden there was going to be a non-disclosure. And yes, she's already given it to us, and we could release it. But in our minds, you know, that's going to put her non-disclosure at jeopardy, even though she gave it to us before. You know, she would be required in the contract to disclose who she had given it to and all that kind of stuff. And you know, we just felt like if she were to reach a settlement with the church at this point, that this tape is buried forever. And it was a really tough decision for us.
By far the toughest decision
we've made. The hardest decision we've ever made. And so, but here is how one of the ways that we justified it at the time was that, because one of the criticisms along with this is that, you know, we're you know, this permission to release was, I suppose, so revoked in a way. And so people says, oh, well, you exposed a victim without their permission, right? Well, in our minds, we didn't think that was going to happen because we had redacted everything about her. And we didn't know that Greg Bishop, Joseph Bishop's son, was going to then dox her to the media.
Which is exactly what he did the next day.
Yeah, and so, and actually a lot of people don't know this, but the LDS Church actually doxed her first. So I got a call the morning after so let me take a step back. We released the tape. Obviously, it went viral. And I was talking to a couple of media outlets, but they couldn't write the story because I refused to tell them her name. And they didn't want her, they didn't want to publish her name. They didn't even want her to go on record if she didn't want to. They, as sort of in their standards, they had to make contact with her and verify that was her voice on the tape. That's all they wanted to do. And I said, I don't, and again, I had never had any direct contact with her. I said, I can't do it. Can't do it. I don't have permission to share her name. So the next morning, I got a call from a reporter that was ready to publish a story. And up to that point, we thought there wasn't going to be a story because they were never going to know her name. And I got a call from a reporter. They're ready to publish a story. And they want my on-the-record reaction to the church's statement to them. The church hadn't made this statement publicly. This is the statement they sent reporters who were inquiring
This is before the Greg Bishop dossier. And the statement said not only that is McKenna Denson a woman of ill repute, and they said that in their ways, but they said her name to the reporters. So now the reporters knew who she was. Later that afternoon, now it's my understanding, now if we want to give the church the benefit of the doubt, that's all your guys' choice. But my understanding is about an hour or so or an hour and a half after they issued that statement to all these reporters, they retracted the statement and removed her name and claimed that they accidentally put her name in there because they thought that her name was already in the public sphere. That's what the church claimed. That's all behind-the-scenes stuff that was never disclosed to the public. To add insult to injury, that I believe it was that afternoon, reporters started receiving a letter, email, I guess, maybe some attachments from this guy, Greg Bishop, who's Joseph Bishop's son, with this dossier that had been put together by a church attorney or an attorney hired by the church that supposedly had, you know, all of these reasons not to believe McKenna. We had no idea. Now, so these reporters are receiving this, and I had several reporters say to me privately, I think she might be lying. You know, and I hadn't seen this dossier, so I really couldn't tell you at the time. Like, but these reporters were very worried. This information, without knowing everything that was going on, apparently for them was compelling enough to say, we need to be cautious here. And what happened, so he basically, Greg Bishop opens this can of worms. And then I start to hear some of the things that McKenna Denson supposedly did that's in this dossier. And again, keep in mind, I still have never interacted with McKenna Denson at this point. But I was freaking out because I'm like, wow, did we, you know, what did we do here? Not only are we being accused of outing this person when we didn't, but we, you know, is she lying? You know, what is, you know, these accusations of what she supposedly did, this is craziness. And it was so stressful that I was in bed on that Wednesday. I could not get out of bed for like 10 hours. I got home from work at like 2 o'clock and I didn't get out of bed till the next morning, basically. I was just, the stress was eating me alive. And the big break came late Wednesday or Thursday when KUTV discovered the BYU police report. I think the first thing they discovered was the BYU police report that said where Bishop admitted to having asked her to show him her breasts to the police. And so, you know, well, that's a far cry from admitting to rape. That was, you know, for him to admit that.
Sorry, just to represent McKenna justly here, McKenna says that that was not her.
Yeah, she says that wasn't
that
her.
Woman in, right? that Joseph Bishop is talking
but
about.
But he says it was her.
Report.
But either way, he admits to saying that to somebody, and he thinks it's her. So that provided us some stress relief there. Like, okay, so maybe she is telling the truth. And then the information about the room came out. And I don't know if you guys know about that, but that person actually contacted me and said, you know, hey, I worked at the MTC a long time ago, and I remember that room.
So,
and we
just some context for those that might not know: Joseph Bishop took McKenna down to a room, and that's where he raped her, and it was in the basement of the MTC. And that room was confirmed to have existed by a former employee.
And I don't think he had ever seen the room set up the way Bishop had it set up, because he wasn't there when Bishop was there. I believe, if I remember correctly, he was there in the 90s, if I remember correctly. But he definitely remembered that room, and he remembered that it was a weird room. And it was a room that was sort of not known to anybody. It was kind of hidden or whatever. And we sent him over to KUTV because he didn't really have any documentation but to give us, so we couldn't really publish anything. But KUTV actually confirmed that he was an employee, and they went through all this stuff to make sure he was an employee actually, and they got some blueprints of the MTC, and he was able to point out exactly where the room was.
He also confirmed the bed.
Did he confirm the bed and the VCR? Okay, so my memory failed me on that one. So, you know, that's some of the context that sometimes the public doesn't realize, like some of the stuff that goes on behind the scenes. And
You know, I've actually since read the dossier, and I mean, I don't know if that's ever going to come to light. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. It's probably not a good time right now. But, you know, the reality is, whether right or wrong, we're all human, right? If you don't, if you don't have the police report where Joseph Bishop says what he said, if you don't have an employee saying, yeah, I've seen that room, and you don't know McKenna at all, and all you have is these things that, you know, mistakes that she's made in her life, I don't think it would be completely unreasonable, especially for a news outlet, to want to go ahead and pass on this story. And it, so it presented, and again, that's like he said, it's not to say that you don't believe her, but it's like, it's one thing to have a victim come to you and tell you their story and for you to believe them. And it's another thing for you to publish it on the internet. Right, those are two different things. And so it was, you know, it was really difficult. But I was talking to a former prosecutor about this at the time. And he said something really that that really changed my the way I kind of look at these things. And he said to me, and he somebody who deals a lot with sexual abuse as a prosecutor. And he said, you know, it when you're dealing with victims and you're trying to ascertain whether or not they're telling the truth, he said, it does not matter any crimes they've committed in their past, and it does not matter any lies they've told in their past. The only thing that would matter as far as a victim's credibility, not the only thing, but the big thing that, that he looks for as a prosecutor, is for lies to be told in relation to the actual abuse. And he said, because what happens is that people who've been abused, and I think, and I don't want to tell McKenna's story here, I'm sure she's going to talk about it on Saturday, but I think she's she probably had a rough life for reasons other than Joseph Bishop. So there's a lot of reasons for her to have maybe acted out in certain ways when she was younger. But, you know, he said to me that it is extremely common, so common to the point that it's expected that victims of abuse do act out in very antisocial ways. And I don't think a lot of just regular Joe people, probably including myself, necessarily have that outlook in these situations. You automatically say, well, you know, this person did this and this person did that, and so, you know, why should I believe him over here? Right? That's the normal human reaction. And, you know, that was something that we grappled with. And again, but for us, you know, before knowing about the police report and before knowing about the room, before meeting McKenna and talking to her on the phone and meeting her in person, you know, we just kind of thought, okay, if we can hide her identity from the public, it didn't matter to us whether or not she was telling the truth or not. We only cared about the fact that here was a former mission president who was admitted to X, Y, and Z, and we wanted to demonstrate that, yes, top leaders are capable of these things. Everything else that came out afterwards, we had no idea it was going to come out. We had no idea. Well, we had no idea about the police report and, you know, the fact that, you know, that McKenna Denson would eventually get a court case in front of a federal judge. We didn't know any of that was going to happen. That's all good stuff. But that's not why we released the tape. We didn't release the tape necessarily to tell McKenna Denson's story. It was to tell the story at the time of Joseph Bishop, who was a man who was admitting to inappropriate actions with multiple women. So I don't know if I've rambled too much. I don't know if I've said too much. I don't know. I don't even want to go to Reddit after this gets heard and find out about how the new reason why I'm a horrible person. But it is what it is. That's the story. It is what it is. And we were making decisions in the moment, and we were trying to make the best decisions possible. I think somebody, part of the question was, would we do it again? And as maybe to some people's surprise, if everything being equal, we would do it again. I don't know, Ethan, do you want to add to that, or did I say the wrong thing? No. Do you need to clarify my misstatement?
No. I thought you did really well. Yeah, I don't know that I fully agree with you that we'd do it again. I think I would. Yeah, I think I would. I don't know. It's super tricky, super, super tricky when you're dealing with this kind of situation. But I regret personally not talking to McKenna beforehand.
Yeah, maybe we, if there is one thing, maybe we could have made a, more of an effort to reach out to her. And I will say, you know, I don't want to completely change the subject, but I hope everybody doesn't notice that he disagreed with me here. And I think one of the things that's important is that, you know, we don't always agree on everything. And we sometimes have fierce debates about, I mean, I think we had fierce debates about the McKenna Denson tape aspects of it and other leaks. I mean, we've had fierce debates where we didn't necessarily start out seeing eye to eye. And I don't know that there's probably some instances where we ended not seeing eye to eye. But I do think that it does tend to keep us honest. You know, we can put each other in check because everybody needs that. But yeah, so it is a tough question to answer, but I guess that's it. We'll move on to another subject. Go ahead.
Two questions. One for McKenna, actually, if that's okay.
That's fine.
That's all right with you.
Certainly.
Coming out publicly with the recording was helpful in getting other people to come out of nowhere and corroborate the facts of what you said. Do you think any future people will come out of nowhere and say more about what happened, about your case? And he said he did it to other women.
You mean about Joseph Bishop? I do think that with time, more victims will come forward. I don't know that I want to elaborate more than that, but I do think that it's highly likely that we will hear from more victims of Joseph Bishop before this book is finished.
And perhaps other...
and other, readers. Sure. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
The second question is, do you recommend that everyone record their interactions with essentially leaders?
That's a personal decision.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't discourage it. We're all adults, or you can do whatever you want.
Okay, well, not to make it all about McKenna today. Just kidding.
We do have, just so you guys know, not to cut you off, but we have, what, 25 minutes or so, roughly? 20 minutes? Okay.
But just before we do move on from that topic, I felt like I just wanted to say, after all of what you explained to us, and I appreciate what you said, but maybe to help comfort you too. The day that your tape was released was the first day I told my husband about my own assault. Mm-hmm. And it was because we were discussing her case. And I know that I am not the only one.
Yeah.
And she has victims on her shoulders that she is the voice for. And people, like you said, who have not had the courage, maybe, to say something until kind of that door was opened. Mm-hmm. And so I applaud you for having the courage to do something so important, not just for that case, but just for people and assault victims.
Yeah, thank you for that. I mean, I do agree that I know that a number of people have found the courage to maybe not necessarily go public, but speak more, at least even in just their own private circles, about things that have happened to them because of what came out with McKenna Denson. So, you know, that definitely has been a positive byproduct of her tape.
I just wondered if, aside from the DMCA takedowns that you got, have you had any kind of pressure, either directly from the church or on behalf of the church, that has been brought to bear on you guys to...
I mean, we get hate mail a lot, but...
Not from the church.
Not from the church.
Not from the church.
We don't actually get a lot of hate mail anymore. I think the longer we're around, people realize that we're not going anywhere. But as far as from the church, nothing. And they won't talk to us. I mean, they called them. Go ahead.
Yeah, they don't return any of our requests for comment.
When we had the recent $32 billion leak, I don't know if you guys saw that, but that was actually the first time we had ever called them before a leak for comment. I had spoken, those that read the leak know that I spoke to one of the employees, but I actually called Eric Hawkins and left a message with his secretary, and she said she would forward it to him, and he never called me back. But we would love to have a working relationship with them. Not that they're going to like us or anything, but we would love to be able to have a cordial, like, hey, Eric, like, tomorrow this hammer's coming down, just so you know. I'm sure he would maybe appreciate that, too, because I think some of the leaks have thrown him in a tailspin.
Yeah, so if Eric, if you're listening to this sometime in the future,
well,
call us up, buddy.
Let's say it like this. The person that is listening to this on behalf of Eric.
Yeah.
Because we know somebody is listening to this and taking notes.
Or if any of you are in the room.
Let him know that we're not bad guys and we don't bite. And I know Eric used to
live in... We'll be very cordial, we promise.
I know that Eric used to live in Henderson where I live. So I'm sure he's got friends there. Maybe he wants to go back and visit sometime. Come down, we'll go have lunch. I'll even pay for it with Mormon Leaks funds. I'll pay for the lunch.
It's been about a week or so since you went to court to get some other additional documents released.
We went to a hearing, but it wasn't court, but yes.
In front of the Utah State Records Committee.
Yeah.
So what's it look like at this point in time since that happened?
Not good. So for those that don't know, there is – I'm not going to tell the whole story because we're short on time, but basically there is a tape. There is a recording of Joseph Bishop being interviewed by the BYU police last November, December, okay? And this is where in the police officer's summary of that interview, the police officer said that he admitted to asking to see McKenna's breasts, right? Well, how do we know that his summary is an accurate representation of what was on the tape? So we filed a GRAMA request, which is the Utah version of Freedom of Information Act request, for the police department to release that tape. They are claiming they don't have to, that they're not subject to GRAMA. They're currently in a lawsuit with the Salt Lake Tribune over the same issue but with a different matter. We filed an appeal. We went to a hearing committee. The hearing committee actually voted unanimously in our favor with one caveat, pending the outcome of the lawsuit with the Salt Lake Tribune. Now, about a day or two later, after our hearing, the Tribune won their case. So we were excited. However, we just found out a couple days ago that the BYU Police Department appealed that.
To the state Supreme Court.
To the state Supreme Court. So we're going to have to wait for that. And that could be years. It could be years.
Yeah.
So.
I'll give you mine.
What's that?
My recording.
Oh, you have it? Oh, see, I didn't even know that. Oh, not yet. Oh, when you get, because you're going to subpoena it as part of your, okay. Yeah, if you get
sounds good.
Then we'll take it. We call dibs. Yes.
I have a question about hope. I'm older than most of the people in this room. I remember Senator McCarthy. I remember the results of Huey Long. I live in the American South. I was in D.C. when Woodward and Bernstein did what they did, and when the Pentagon Papers were released. I was in uniform in Southeast Asia when the Watergate hearings happened. I'm old.
Sounds like an understatement. No, I'm just kidding. That was a joke.
Wow. Wow.
He opened that door. He opened that door.
And I will say what I intended to say.
Yeah.
I was a chaplain in the military, and I know a good deal about courage. You have shown a great deal of courage in what you've done. And you have done it with an integrity, a journalistic integrity, if you are to be believed, and I believe you. Hard to maintain. I commend you for that and suggest that we all kind of clap, but you can't do that.
This isn't church. You guys can clap.
Thank you.
But I do have a question.
Yeah.
I'm wearing a T-shirt today that says, never forget, partly in humor. But when you're my age, and there's a T-shirt that says something like, never forget, if you're wearing T-shirts in those days, what do you want to remember, be remembered for having made happen that wouldn't have happened otherwise, that made life better? I think that will tell us something about your courage.
Okay.
Thank you.
Go ahead. You want to answer first?
Yeah.
Thank you for that. Very
let's
nice.
See.
Okay.
I think the I think the McKenna Denson tape, right? I think that really was the first time that survivors. I'm a big believer of using that word rather than victim. Now everyone thinks I'm a flaming liberal, but that's okay. that was the first time that survivors, I mean, it gave survivors, as Camille said, a shoulders to stand on, right? And there are a lot of them in the church. And it was the first time that a lot of people realized that things like that can happen, that they currently are happening, and that these kind of things need to be exposed and need to be stopped. By far, I think that is the most important thing that we have brought to light so far.
Yeah, and I agree with him. And it is really hard to like pinpoint one thing that we're most proud of. But I think for me, the thing that I always come back to when I'm asked that question is the conversations that we've started and fostered through the things that we published. I think that if you track the social media activity related to our leaks from day one, there are not only conversations that have never happened between Mormons and believing, or ex-Mormons and believing Mormons, but maybe some conversations that did exist were taken to other deeper levels that didn't, you know, that had never been. And so for me, that's one of the things I'm most proud of, is that we've been able to foster productive conversation out there. And, you know, that productive conversation is happening at a grassroots level. And if there ever is going to be change, you know, I expressed some pessimism earlier, but I will put that away for one quick second. I will say, if there ever is going to be change, it is going to be grassroots, and it will be people at the bottom demanding the change. And so I think we have at least started those conversations, and I'm very proud of that. Go ahead.
Well, I haven't been familiar with this case until now. But so correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm getting the real strong impression that these things are going on with people in positions of power, the bishop, stake president, and you know, you have evidence that they occurred, and so they have a tape, and other victims come forward, but you're saying the church is not, they're colluding in the cover-up. In other words, they're not doing any church discipline. They're not going to Bishop, whatever his name is.
Joseph Bishop. His last name is Bishop, which makes it confusing. Joseph Bishop.
So what is the role that the church is taking in this? They're just doing the cover-up?
A great question.
That's exactly the question that needs to be asked.
It's hard to say, like, from a hardcore factual standpoint, because you know, while I do think that it's reasonable to assume, and maybe there has been some evidence here and there, that the church has gone out of its way to minimize the after effects of abuse that has occurred and things like that, you know, I don't think we've ever seen any hard evidence, like documented evidence, of the church sort of making something go away. But I mean, there's definitely influence there. Like, how much the influence is, how widespread it is, I suppose we don't know. But I would just say that the more of this information that gets out, the easier it will be to paint that picture and answer your question.
Well, because I've talked to people that report abuse too, and that the bishop did it, or that they told their bishop and the bishop did nothing.
Well,
anecdotally,
sure.
You would hear. I mean, there's a lot of evidence of abuse out there that church just doesn't.
Well, the abuse happens. There's no doubt about that. So I think where it becomes tricky as far as making definitive statements is the extent to which the church covers it up. So because the church's defense usually in these situations is that, hey, the bishop killed it at the local level. If we would have known about it, we would have done something, right? That's usually the corporate position. Now, is that always true? It's probably not always true. But, you know, hopefully more light will come forward on that kind of stuff, you know, at some point in the future. But I've never seen, like, a smoking gun yet that, like, shows
corporate leadership sort of directing a cover-up. Mm-hmm. But that's not to say it's never happened. So I want to be clear on that. I'm not saying that it's never happened. But I think one of the reasons why, you know, you're kind of asking, you know, why isn't this, you know, coming more to light? I think the evidence just hasn't been presented except for sort of anecdotally. And it's hard for anecdotal stories to get traction in within journalistic circles, because journalists want to deal with like hard facts as opposed to like a person's story, which could potentially be colored with bias, if you will. Does that make sense?
Well, look what happened in the Catholic Church with the cover up for years.
Sure.
Yeah.
But it, look how long it took for them to uncover that, right? So and it could get uncovered, it might not, and you know, we hope it does if it's there. So okay.
Well, I just want to thank both of you for your work and for what you do. You've definitely impacted my life personally. I'm an abuse survivor advocate, and I told myself I shouldn't get up because I've been emotional the whole time. I love two things. I love my children, and I love the truth. And for 10 years, I have been speaking out about abuse and trying to help survivors in the church empower themselves and own their stories. And when you leaked McKenna's tape, first of all, Ryan knows well that he completely rocked my world, because up until that point, I believed that it was just a problem within families. And I am so grateful to have the truth and to see the truth and to understand the truth and to be honored to work with this amazing woman. The grassroots movement that you've started is this Mormon Me Too movement. And in regards to the last question that was asked, I have heard hundreds of stories, even before now, and more are coming forward whose stories are very similar to McKenna's. It's causing a faith crisis across the board for almost every survivor who is seeing and understanding that there is a systematic problem within the church. And so my question for you is just if you could just say something from your heart, like what... You've both obviously been through your own faith crisis and your own faith transition. You grew up in the church like we did, and you've seen the truth and you love the truth. So you could say something there.
I appreciate what you said about loving the truth. I love the truth too. That's why I do what I do. I believe that I truly believe that happiness can only be found in the truth. And I know... organizing my thoughts. Something what you said is this is causing a faith crisis for a lot of people, and I kind of want to hit on that our motivation is not to cause a faith crisis in people. If people want to stay in the church, if people want to leave the church, if they want to do Mormonism their own way, whatever they want to do, I personally do not care. I left the church because I'm much happier outside of the church. Some people stay in the church because they are much happier inside the church, right? I want people to do what makes them happy, and I believe that they can only truly do that when the church is being held accountable for their public actions that really influence their lives. The church has such a hold, and religion in general, not just the Mormon church, but religion in general has so much hold over people's lives, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. Let me point that out. But people who are engaging in that kind of a relationship with any organization need to hold that organization accountable. And that can only be done with transparency. And that's why I do what I do.
Yeah, I mean, like Ethan, I love the truth. And I've been like that my entire life. And I grew up in an environment that, you know, at the age of 32, I was one of those Mormons that honestly believed that there was... know that the church had never sort of institutionally told a lie, that there was no legitimate reason to question the truthfulness of the church. And when I found out that, you know, maybe that wasn't exactly the case, you know, it's kind of one of those things where you can't put, you know, the rabbit back into the hat. And so, yeah, I mean, the pursuit of truth is
is definitely what drives me, what drove me then. It's what drives me in Mormon Leaks, and it's what drives me in my daily life. I mean, that's what I did for a living for a long time, was find the truth and not just take people's word for it. And I just, for at 32, I just for the first time applied those principles to the church. I would say to, you know, believers that they've been sold a bill of goods, not in the sense that the church being true or not. I don't want to like make that argument. Like Ethan said, if somebody wants to be a Mormon, more power to them. But they've been sold a bill of goods in the sense that the fear-mongering that has happened since day one of the church being started, to demonize anybody who dares speak a critical word, even when rooted in truth, that somehow, you know, these people are not to be listened to, they're evil at their core, they are lying to you when they open their mouth. This bill of goods that they've been sold and bought into has not served them well in their lives. And while they may be happy, and I won't say they're not happy, I won't even go down that path, I think that there is an untapped world out there that they are being held back from because they are afraid of anything that even smells like it might disrupt their current worldview. And I would hope that maybe for those that do have that fear, that they could try to maybe tear down that wall a little bit. Because, you know, there's a whole world out there that I didn't know existed, of experiences, of thoughts, of friendships, of, you know, everything. And, you know, it's not all good, right? Life is not all good. You know, life is pain. But I think once you accept that and you start to take in all of the pain and joys of life, you reach a level of understanding that you just cannot have when you enclose yourself in a bubble where I can't listen to anything, you know, that disrupts my precious testimony. And I would just remind people that don't already realize it, that it is possible to entertain uncomfortable conversations and still maintain a testimony. And so they shouldn't be afraid of having those uncomfortable conversations, whether that be with us or with their family members who have left the church. And, you know, I don't know. I kind of started rambling there, so I kind of lost my point, but...
It happens all the time with him.
It happens all the time. He'll call me about something, and like 2 hours later, I'll be like, you know, what were we supposed to talk about here? So, but yeah, I don't know if I answered your question or not. But listen, I think it's about time, right? So I just wanted to say we're really grateful for everybody that shows us love and support. We're grateful for our critics. You know, not so much for the ones that email us and tell us to commit suicide, but those are fun. Those are the ones that are for our entertainment. But even the legitimate critics who try to say, hey, maybe this should have been done this way or whatever. Believe me, we take these things to heart, and we are always trying to improve our processes and our presentation. And so, you know, we really do appreciate anybody that engages with us on any level. And for all of you that have come here today and you've had a ton of choices of things that you could do today. And so the fact that you came and sat in here is awesome. We have another presentation tomorrow morning at 9:00. We'd love all of you to be there too. Just so you know, there's probably not going to be much of a Q&A opportunity in that one. We're actually going to talk a little bit more, I don't know if serious is the right word, but you know, today was meant to be fun and get to know you. You guys get to know us, but we actually have an actual sort of presentation tomorrow that we want you to hear. So, we'd invite you to come to that, and I'm giving a couple of presentations on Saturday that have nothing to do with Mormon Leaks, but, you know, and feel free to come and walk up to us out in the hallway. Yeah. Don't think that we're, like, too busy. Come and talk to us and say hello and tell me about that one time you messaged me on Reddit, and I'll apologize for not remembering because I get so many messages, but I would love to meet all of you, so... All right, I don't know if you had anything else to say.
Yeah, just want to reiterate, come find us. We're more than happy to field more questions in person and whatnot. Thank you so much. Thank you.